Hello, party people, and welcome to Office Hours, the webcast where I answer your questions about the Microsoft Data Platform. You can post your own questions and upvote the ones you'd like to see me cover over at the URL up there, and it's down in the video description as well. So let's see what y'all upvoted the most. Looks like the top one is from CKI. CKI says, could you please give me pointers on how to answer the question, do we need to create a new instance for the new app, or can we use the existing one? Oh, that's a great question. Here's the way that I would ask it. Look at the people who are already using the existing SQL Server and ask them, are you happy with performance today? If they're happy with performance, you might be able to add additional workload to that SQL Server. You might not. It all depends on how that new workload looks like. But on the other side, if they already tell you, no, we're unhappy with performance on this SQL Server, well, then it probably doesn't make sense to add more workload until you fix the problems that you already have on that SQL Server. Next up, Chris May asks, with an index, if you can guarantee selectivity with two key columns, is there a difference between adding an extra key or an included column? Which would you typically prefer? Guarantee unique selectivity. Boy, this is such a weird way of asking this question. Chris, you should totally go to my Fundamentals of Index Tuning class, which happens to be partially, where's the button? On sale this week. Oh, I was like, where's my image? If you go to brentozar.com/Black Friday, my classes are on sale right now. And see, the reason why I say that is, it sounds like you're saying, what does it matter whether something's in the key or whether it's in the includes? And of course it does, because if, say, you have order by and the order by asks for all three of those columns, well, you'll need it in the key. Otherwise, if it's just in the includes, SQL Server's going to sort that data again from scratch. But here's the kicker. Even when it is in the key, SQL Server may still need to sort that data. And I teach you that concept in the very first Fundamentals class, Fundamentals of Index Tuning. Chris, the fact that you're asking that question means that you haven't even been to the first one of these classes. And Chris, I pour my heart out for you, giving you all kinds of free training all throughout the entire course of the year. Isn't it time that you get that big, thick wallet of yours out and give me some money? It makes it sound like I'm broke, right? I'm not really broke. Now, but if you want to save money on my training classes, go over to brentozar.com/Black Friday, and that question will be answered in the very first Fundamentals class that I would encourage you to teach, Fundamentals of Index Tuning. All right, so let's go back over here. Next up, we have Pajama Rama, who I just love that name. Pajama Rama says, in one of our customers, the user databases are different than TempDB. What's the best way to fix that? We prefer to keep the, he says, the CI AI collation, the user database. Okay, so you want to change the collation of your system databases. I don't recommend doing that. What I would do instead is build new SQL servers with the collation that you want and then go from there. I'm sure someone's going to come up with some witchcraft way to change the collation of TempDB, but then I really don't want TempDB to have a different collation than your system databases, master, model, MSDB, etc. If your TempDB is that collation right there, then that means so is master and model, and that means you can run into implicit conversion problems when you're trying, well, collation data. You can run into query problems, too early in the morning for me to elaborate on that one, run into query problems when you're trying to join between things in master and TempDB, and this can hit monitoring tools, backup applications, all kinds of other stuff. So the thing that I would do is I would go through and create a new SQL Server instance with the collations that you want, and then log ship your databases over to there and fail over to it. Next up, Maxim asks, what would you do first if two SQL servers with the same version in CU generate almost identical execution plans with one exception? Second server generates one additional block, and that's why it's 10 times work faster. Oh, so you want to compare two query plans and understand why they're different and where they, how, what drove those differences. Maxim, it just happens that I have, I need to hide that little thing that keeps popping up and obscuring me. It just so happens that I have training classes on sale for that. So what I would do is I would attend the fundamentals of query tuning class and the mastering query tuning class, and you can learn more about those over at brentosr.com/Black Friday and go from there. Now, you'll also get a big kick out of the mastering parameter sniffing classes, which talk a little bit how to guide SQL Server towards one particular execution plan when it has several choices. All right. Next up, let's see. Peter says, what is your opinion of Azure VM host caching for SQL VMs? This is kind of neat. So what you're really asking is, there are a bunch of performance options in every cloud provider, Azure, Google, Amazon. There are a bunch of options. Those options keep changing, and they're different for every workload. One of the cool parts is that it's relatively easy to test those things. You can do an I/O test. You can use something like Crystal Disk Mark. You can use a backup or restore test. Test them and then see how it works with your own setup. Because it can be different depending on the type of VM that you're using, the type of storage that you're using, all of that. If you want to get an idea of how I do that kind of testing for any particular feature, search on the blog on brentosr.com for FAUX PAAS. FAUX PAAS, where I worked with a company in order to configure and test their VMs up in, that one was Amazon EC2. But it'll give you an idea of the depth that you need to go when you're trying to figure out what's the best way to configure something. I don't want to give you a fish and teach you about one particular feature, because for the rest of your career, you're going to have these same questions about every time Amazon, Azure, Google brings out a new feature at the EC2 or VM host level. You're going to have to keep testing those. This is part of your new job. Next, Peter says, what does your op loved ones, OP loved ones, OP loved ones at home say when you talk like Clippy all the time? I don't talk like Clippy outside of the office. I do have voices for things like the dog, though, or for typical client or typical training class attendee. But those I don't do inside this office. That's my little fun joke with them. Gerardo says, what's your top story about when you were burned by missing or incorrect SQL Server documentation? Oh, wow, that's really interesting. So I just posted a blog post about a problem with MaxDop with setup. This was driven by, I put a lot of work into my upcoming PaaS Summit session about everything that you know about parallelism is wrong. And I built the whole thing out, and I knew what VM type I was going to use in Amazon, and I knew what MaxDop was supposed to be set up automatically by setup. And I walked through it, and I was like, wait a minute, SetupXE didn't do what the documentation says it's going to do. And so then I posted something, and Microsoft's Sean Gallardy actually went through the source code and went, oh, yeah, no, you're right. This doesn't do what the documentation says it does. But that wasn't very destructive. Now, the interesting thing about that is that everyone in the world who has a SQL server with 16 logical processors per NUMA node, their MaxDop is probably set incorrectly and probably has been set that way for a while. There's some debate about whether or not this bug was introduced in SQL Server 2016 setup. Another former Microsoft SQL Server person says that it was not, says that setup 2016 worked correctly and that it happened sometime after that. So for some several years now, we don't know exactly how much everybody's MaxDop has been set incorrectly if you had 16 logical processors per NUMA node. Now, the number of people out in the world who even understand what that sentence means is relatively small, so it's not like that really burned me that bad. off the top of my head, I don't know another story that like jumps out at me. That one just jumps out at me because I spent days working on it, trying to understand, you know, my first inclination is always that I made a mistake because my friends who work for Microsoft are always like, Brent, you think you know what you're talking about, but you don't. Here's why. So when I go, I have to go like, here's all the evidence. I've done it this many ways. Here's all the ways to prove it. You tell me. And then that way the Microsoft people don't go, Brent, you're an idiot. You know what they did? Brent, you're an idiot, until Sean Gallerty actually went through the source code, went, oh no, actually Brent's right on this one. And it's always nice to hear that. Too Much Spare Time says, last time there was a question about how to deliver bad news as a consultant. What type of bad news do you find delivering the most? This is easy. Over and over again, managers believe they're not going to lose data in the database. Over and over again, managers are like, we back up every hour and we put those backups off site. We know we're not going to lose any data. And then when we go in and look at the SQL Server, I'm like, oh, so you take backups every 12 hours and they've been failing for the last 4 days. What? That can't be possible. And then the DBA looks in. The DBA is like, oh, I guess alerting isn't quite set up right. But some of the backups are working. And I'm like, wah, wah, wah. This happens over and over again. I can't even tell you. That probably happens to me at least 3-4 times a month. It's insane. The part of me thinks that's a product problem, because in SQL Server Management Studio, it should be blatantly clear if your databases aren't being backed up. Like when you look at the list of databases in Management Studio, it looks like everything's hunky-dory. It looks like everything's just fine, when in reality, there are flames coming out the side, and there's just no easy way to surface that. Next up, we have Chris, who asks, with a SQL Server built on a VM, is there a way to determine CPU or memory pressure on the host without having access to vCenter? Not that I'm aware of. There used to be a counter, a VMware counter for memory ballooned, but that doesn't necessarily mean that there's pressure on the host, because you can actually achieve that with changing settings on the VM itself, like capping how much memory the VM gets. Even though it's presented 256 gigs, it may only be allowed to use, say, 64 gigs. So I don't think that there's a truthful way to determine that inside the VM. Next up, Locked Up asks, I have a proc that's causing deadlocks. I've tracked it down to an update with a rollock hint. Could the rollock hint be causing the deadlock? Okay, hold on a second here. Let's think about this. You say you're having deadlocks, and you've tracked it down to something, and you want to know if that something caused the deadlock. You're the one who tracked it down, buddy. That was you. I didn't track it down. You said you tracked it down to something, and now you want to know if what you tracked it down to was the right thing. How the heck do I know? I don't know what your troubleshooting process is. Now, if you attended one of my training classes, you would know my troubleshooting trackdown processes for deadlocks. I have, in the Mastering Index Tuning, Query Tuning, and Server Tuning classes, I explain how to track down the root causes of blocking. In the Mastering Query Tuning class, I show you how queries cause deadlocking. I show you how to fix it. I show you how to fix it with index changes, query changes, and server level changes. And it just so happens, I know you're never going to believe this, but it just so happens that those are on sale. If you go to brentozar.com/Black Friday, you can get my mastering classes. Now, because this is a hard topic, because a lot of people can go through their whole entire career and never have to troubleshoot problems like updates causing deadlocking, those are in the mastering classes, not in the fundamentals. So that's okay. You seem like a really smart person, so I think you're ready for those mastering classes. Next up, Leonard asks, I think this is Leonard Cohen calling back from the dead. Now, I love the name Leonard. I think it's fantastic because of the Leonard Cohen, among many other reasons. What is your opinion of the SQL Server Data Collector? It's hot garbage. Is it any good for performance tuning, no, performance troubleshooting? In my opinion, no. The default collections that ship with it are hot garbage, and they cause more problems than they solve. Any time that I've ever seen the SQL Data Collector installed, it's always been at the top most resource-intensive queries on the system. So it can be, the infrastructure can be useful if you wad up and throw away the default queries, and then you start again building your own monitoring tool, which seems kind of ridiculous. Mache says, do you have a missing feature in SSMS that you treat as an old friend? The fact that Clippy, the missing index recommendations, only surfaces the first missing index in the execution plan. If you go into the XML, there are, you know, there could be 3, 4, 5 missing index recommendations. SSMS just only shows you the first one. In addition, if you could influence Microsoft to implement one feature, I suppose you mean, which one would it be? I'm going to say something that's a pipe dream that I don't think it can be done, at least not easily, not without having an army of PhDs go to work on it. But what I would love to have is when I'm looking at an execution plan, if you click on an operator, I want to see the part of the T SQL highlighted that's causing that. Now, it's easy in like an order by. If you have a sort in the execution plan and you click on the sort, the relevant order by should be highlighted and so that you can see, oh, here's why we're doing a sort. But even that simplistic explanation hides all kinds of problems because you can have sorts in execution plans without having asked for them explicitly. Like if you put in a group by or group by plus having, you can end up having a sort in the execution plan because of the group by. You can also have things that are driven by underlying views. Maybe you query a view and it's got filtering and group by in it. When you click on the plan, you would want to know, oh, that is coming from this part of the T SQL. So I totally understand why it hasn't been built yet. But if I could have like any one thing that I wanted, that would be really cool. Because people often ask me when we're looking at a query plan, why is it doing that? And I want to be able to show them, oh, it's because of this. I can do it. It's just a lot of manual work. Next up, Leaf asks, hi, Brent. Really enjoy your Think Like the Engine and the Fundamentals. Very cool. He says, my friend has this theory, and Mr. Codd meant that all joins between tables are the best way of getting data. What? I don't even understand. Never denormalize. Is there any rule of thumb rules? Are there any thumb of rules? Leaf, slow down. Stop typing so fast. When you get done typing each paragraph, maybe you want to stop and reread them out loud. And you'll go like, oh my God, I was so all over the place here. Are there any rule of thumbs when it comes to denormalizing? Usually for performance. You can't always afford to spider joins across 30 different tables in order to get what you want. For performance purposes, you may have to denormalize. This is especially true of reporting systems like data warehouses. And then we'll do one more question. Let's see here. Chris asks, I understood when Azure SQL DB was always current. However, when I view the compat level of some of my databases, they're not current. Is it up to me to change this? Yes. Are there any gotchas with doing so? Yes. Compatibility level can change the behavior of the query optimizer so you can get different execution plans. What I'll generally tell people is leave your databases on the compat level that you're on until you have time to do performance tuning. When you have time to do performance tuning, then go gather a baseline of performance about how your queries perform with the old compat level. Tools like QueryStore can help with this by capturing those execution plans. Then when you want to start doing performance tuning, plan a Saturday or whatever to flip the compat level to the new version and watch to see how performance goes. Some of your queries may get dramatically worse, in which case you want to go capture the new query plans so you can compare them to the old plans. You know, you let the SQL Server run or Azure SQL DB over the weekend, harvesting the plans that suddenly went to hell in a handbasket, then flip the compat level back. then through the course of the week, you can say, all right, here are the queries that I have to go work on and figure out why performance is suddenly terrible. When you talk to your manager about that, you can say, well, all right, I've laid out all these queries that I need to fix in order to change compat level. And they're like, are those queries working fine today? Yeah, but, well, then maybe you should go on and do something else in your job. So it just becomes a little tricky to go through and have that conversation. All right, we've been going for about 20 minutes. I will call it quits here. I will go have myself a lovely breakfast here, head down to my local Mothership Coffee in Henderson, Nevada, and get myself a nice ham pillow. That is what they call their croissants with ham and cheese, a ham pillow, which I just thought is the most adorable term. So I will see y'all on the next Office Hours. Adios.